This is Jonathan Healy filling in for Pat Kenny. 41 kilometres long, about 6 to 12 kilometres wide. It's a strip of land that people are very familiar with. They know the Gaza Strip, and it has seen more violence and human suffering than an area of its size should ever expect to endure throughout history. We routinely read about border protests ending in bloodshed, intermittent conflict flaring in the region, tit-for-tat violence between the two sides sharing that part of the planet. But my next two guests went to film a documentary there, but came away with something very different. And this is a little bit of a clip from Gaza.
People from the outside countries, they can't see other than the fact that we live in constant wars. The only thing they give us is like sympathy, and it bothers me so much. They only see the side they want to see. They should look deeper. Whenever like I dream, like I close my eyes, I see myself on an island, and all you can see is like the sea. Whenever like I stand there and breathe the air of the sea, I can breathe freedom. The feeling you get, it's amazing. It can't be expressed by words, like seriously.
That's a 14-year-old kid. Her name is Carmen. She's one of those featuring in this documentary made by filmmakers Andrew McConnell and Gary Keane, who are both with me now in studio. Gentlemen, you're very welcome. Thank you very much for joining us. Andrew, I'll turn to you first. When you went out there, what was your intention? Well, sorry, what were you going to make?
Well, the intention was to really go beyond what we know about Gaza. Of all these news headlines that we see over the years, and everybody is familiar with this place, Gaza, or think they're familiar with it. But when you think about it, we don't really know anything apart from that there's conflict every few years. And so what we really were driven to do was to go beyond that and bring you into the heart of a place that is actually quite secretive, and a place where conflict is only a small part of the reality. And let us see what life is really like there under a blockade that we've all heard about that is now going on 12 years. But what is the day-to-day life and reality for the people who live there, and who are these people, essentially? And so we've done that through really meeting just the ordinary people on the ground and letting them talk for themselves, rather than the politicians, rather than whether it's Hamas, Israel, whoever, or the commentators, because we're all familiar with this. And so for once, let's just give a voice to the normal people on the ground.
Gary, it would have been easy to go in and make a political documentary because the politics of this is all pervasive. But what I like about what you've captured in the programme is the normal, effectively the new normal for people living in a conflict zone. And it's something we always tend to forget when we live in a peaceful situation, that human beings are very adaptable and they do adapt to difficult circumstances, and that's what comes through more than anything else from the young people to the older people that you speak to.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unfortunate situation that you have to adapt to that extreme that the people in Gaza find themselves living under. I mean, it's a consented effort to quieten people and to not show the real life. I mean, it serves many agendas to just perpetrate the notion that Gaza is a terrorist ridden place where, you know, people are justifiably protecting themselves and defending their borders, and that's not the case. There's a tiny percentage of people go and try and voice their opinions and try and voice their protest at the blockade and at the occupation. And but you know, 99% of the people in Gaza, the two million people that try and eke out an existence there, have no interest in anything other than trying to live a normal life, trying to get by, trying to raise their family, trying to do the things that we all take for granted. Mm. And yet you can take nothing for granted in Gaza because they're living under the fear of constant conflict and constant bombardment.
Their options are obviously very limited. And that becomes very clear early on when you speak to a young boy whose dream it is to have a fishing boat, a big fishing boat, as he described it. But I imagine his version of big is different to our version of big. But his motivation for that was that he was going to give his brother's work and his cousin's work. So it wasn't that he wanted to be a fisherman. It was what he wanted to help other people.
I mean, it's an unfortunate situation when you have 13 and 14 year old kids, you know, thinking in that way that they have to somehow try and feed their family. You know, kids should be free. You know, our 14 year old kids here, you know, have all of the privileges of the free world where they can, you know, be children.
They're on Fortnite right now.
Yeah, to be kids before you become the adult, before you take those responsibilities on board. But in Gaza, it's a different set of circumstances. I mean, nobody has any money. There's no work. Everyone has to put the shoulder to the wheel and try and eke out some sort of a living. And we're not talking about much. We're talking about, you know, trying to find a couple of fish in 3 kilometres of water that might just get you through the day. You know, it's not, they're not looking for profits margins here. They're looking for existence.
How easy was it to speak to people, Andrew? I mean, to get them to open up like that, because here you are, two Irish guys landing over there. They may or may not be aware of Ireland and what it might be, but to get them to open up and to show you that element of life that you wanted to see, as opposed to the, and I use the phrase, propaganda site that might fill another void. Was it easy to get them to speak to you?
Well, that's the thing. It's a surprisingly easy place to work in because they feel so cut off and abandoned by the outside world. When you go there, they're extremely surprised and grateful that someone has actually taken the time to come and listen to their side of the story. So you find that people are open and will talk to you quite freely and express themselves. So we never had any issues of from that point of view. I mean, the only issues you might have are from the authorities, from Hamas, and trying to navigate working there on the ground with a regime like that, who are becoming perhaps more and more paranoid and more concerned about who are these foreigners coming into the place because of what they're dealing with in terms of Israel. And there has been cases of, after we were there last year, a car was stopped at a checkpoint and it turned out to be an Israeli special forces unit, and a shootout ensued and there was many people killed on both sides. So we had to navigate that. And
were you concerned for your well-being, your safety? Did you ever feel as if you were going to be hurt or injured, not because you did something deliberately, but because you accidentally got caught up in what is a very dangerous situation there?
Not outside of the conflict. I mean, I always felt safe going there. Just when there is no war, you can really move around the territory quite easily, and everybody's quite friendly, as I say. But when the war broke out in 2014... I mean, that was, yeah, incredibly dangerous time because it was indiscriminate. The bombing attacks would come from all sides and you didn't know, there was no point in running across the street to try and get away from it because you didn't know if the bomb would fall over there or over here or anywhere. So, and that lasted for 50 days. So that, I mean, that was extremely difficult.
The footage reminded me an awful lot of something I saw. I think it was the BBC did a documentary on young people's lives in Northern Ireland in the early 1970s. And there was more of a political overtone to it, obviously enough. But it was the same thing. It was the way we wouldn't necessarily look at young people's lives, the challenges that faced them. The parallels are very obvious to Northern Ireland in the 70s, aren't they? And again, given your accents and where you sound like you're from without knowing where you're from, did you feel that?
I mean, it was funny. We keep getting asked that because Andrew was born in Enniskillen, just one side of the border in Fermanagh, and I was born in Ballyshannon, just literally the other. So there was only half an hour between the two of us, and we're constantly asked about the parallels and had that any influence on us wanting to make a film in Gaza. And it's a hard one to answer. I mean, we both grew up in a time where we remember it very clearly. We remember, you know, checkpoints. We remember, you know, the whole situation there and the troubles and the bombing. So maybe somewhere in the DNA that's has affected our decisions to want to tell stories like this. But, you know, you despair at the lack of will. We had, obviously, there was a peace process in Ireland and people didn't know whether that would ever happen. And it did, thankfully, and things have sort of, you know, settled down greatly. But you just look at the situation out there and you just despair at the fact that there doesn't seem to be a will on any side to sit down and try and negotiate a settlement to this. You know, the people in Gaza just feel let down by their own internal politics. They feel let down by external politics. They feel let down by the international community. They just feel like nobody's looking at them and caring, and they've been forgotten about.
But these kids know no different, do they? I mean, this is life as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, those kids that are going to the borders, like, I mean, they've grew up with this. They know nothing else, you know, and they have no jobs. The unemployment is sky high there. They have no prospects. They know they'll never get out. They know no one's coming in, or they think no one's ever going to come in to help them. What do? You sit around all day and kind of not protest and not voice your anger at what's going on. Their kids going to a wall and throwing stones. That's what they do. You know what I mean? It's and getting shot in return. So I mean, I hate to say the word hopeless, but it's getting increasingly so. I mean, the UN say that you know Gaza is going to be uninhabitable by the year 2020. That's next year. I mean, how far are people going to let this go before somebody says stop?
Did it get to you, Andrew? I mean, you're there doing a job, okay? So you're looking through a lens. So there is almost a security in that you're there for a reason. You're a documentary maker. You're not. It's the classic journalistic trick. It's not me. It's not real. I'm watching. But there must have been times when it got to you.
Well, yes. You know, the lens is a barrier, and it was a useful one. I mean, during the war, you go into a sort of automatic mode and you're just saying to yourself, okay, I have to cover this. I have to cover this as best as possible. I'm here right now on the ground. You know, I went in there to start filming with characters and look for characters, and the war broke out. But when you find yourself in that situation, you just have to cover it as best you can. And so it becomes, it's a very sort of surreal thing, because it becomes almost normalised after a few weeks. And then you're just going every day, and you have this routine where you go to where the bombings had happened overnight, you go to the hospitals, then you go to morgues, and then you go to funerals, but it's day after day of this. And perhaps you don't realise exactly how much of this is sinking in. I mean, certainly when I came home, it took me a while to really sort of decompress and process all of that. And perhaps I still am processing some of it, but it's tempered by the fact that at least I get to leave, because I can go out here, come back home to Ireland, go to the, you know, surfing on the West Coast and just go on holiday, do whatever I want. But all of those people, 2 million people, came through that war and then are sitting around trying to get out of it, but thinking, well, the next one could be just around the corner. So I can't imagine the psychological pressure that must be.
It's a unique perspective, and I don't mean just to say that because you're sitting here in front of me. It is a unique perspective that we haven't seen before. It's beautifully shot, and it is a very compelling and honest depiction of the reality of people living in Gaza. It is going to be shown, which is of course the reason why you made it. So where is it going to be shown, Gary?
It's opening tonight all across the country. We're in the IFI. We're having a Q&A there tonight. It's in the Lighthouse all week. It's in Cork, Galway, opening up in Bundoran and Donegal, in Derry and Belfast. So we just urge people to go along, and it's not from the point of view of trying to promote us or filmmakers or the film. It's from the point of view of, we made this film to try and shed some sort of light, to try and give some sort of an idea to people what the reality on the ground is, what it's like for ordinary people living in this extraordinary difficult situation. So we just love people to come away from watching the film with you know, the people of Gaza in their hearts and minds, and try and do some little thing to in their own sphere to try and help the situation in whatever way they can, because God knows those people need all the help they can get.
Andrew McConnell, Gary Keane, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks,
thank you.
Cheers.